960 Pinder on Twitter. This is Sportsnet 960. The Fan.
No Ryan Pinder this morning. We're all filling in for him and Pinder in the morning on Sportsnet 960. The Fan. Ryan is back tomorrow. Coming up this hour, chat just in a couple of moments with Darren Haynes. Flames from 80feet.ca. We'll chat all things playoffs. He actually has an interesting comparable to a team still playing right now when talking about the Calgary Flames, and we'll get into that for sure. Shai Davidi at 9:25. We'll chat some Blue Jays as Jose Bautista still trying to find his sunglasses this morning. They were knocked off in that 8th-inning brawl against Texas yesterday afternoon. They're back in action tonight against the Rays, so we'll catch up with Shai, get his thoughts on yesterday's game in Texas, and also his thoughts on the struggling bullpen and more. All right, Darren Haynes joins us right now. Good morning, Darren. How are you?
Hey, buddy. Doing pretty good. How are you?
I'm all right. It's Monday morning. The sun is shining, so all is well. Let's go back to yesterday afternoon. St. Louis takes a 2-1 win over San Jose in Game 1, and it continues to be the biggest story right now for St. Louis. Is Brian Elliott continues to be the guy, and you know, for years, or the last couple of years anyways, it's been the question of when do they get rid of Brian Elliott and give the ball to Jake Allen, but right now, Brian Elliott's the guy giving the Blues a 1-0 series lead in the Western Conference Final.
Yeah, it's become very evident why they have resisted any temptation they may have had to make such a move. When St. Louis was at the Saddle Dome earlier this year, we were chatting with Jeremy Rutherford, the beat writer for St. Louis, and then kind of asking the question, like, why would St. Louis be motivated to trade Brian Elliott? And couldn't come up with a reason other than, I guess, what you might be able to get for him. But he's so important to that team to have two goaltenders. I mean, we're seeing it play out in front of us, why you need to have two goalies you can trust if you're in that kind of narrow window to legitimately win the Stanley Cup. You just can't risk not being too deep in the crease. And he's showing it. Something that, I did this dissertation of how bad the Flames goaltending was right at the end of the season. And right. In that, I came up with a formula. It's nothing groundbreaking, but I came up with criteria for what constituted a steal of a hockey game. And I have three bullet points for that. It's a goaltender that faces 32 or more shots, allowed two or fewer goals on a team that got outshot by six or more. So those are my three bullets. And I looked at that in respect to the Flames, and they had only had a goaltender steal a game three times, including the game 82 when Backstrom won that 2-1 game in Minnesota. Three times over an 82-game season. So I applied that same criteria to this year's playoffs, and I looked at Brian Elliott five times already, including game 1 against San Jose and game 7 against Dallas. Five times he's legitimately, by my criteria, stolen a hockey game. And that's how teams win Stanley Cups, is by getting that kind of goaltending.
Well, and you mentioned trust, and I think that's certainly key in this case, because you look at a team and somebody listening in could say, you know, hang on a second, two goalies maybe not always the best thing, because it didn't necessarily work out for the Dallas Stars.
Yeah, with two goalies, yeah, okay. So
trust is the key,
rotation,
right?
Yeah, not a rotation,
right,
but two guys that you have a... If one guy goes down, say he breaks his leg, or he felt like he broke his leg, or in kind of Tampa Bay's position, or if, just based on how the regular season ends. So I don't think switching goaltenders works, but to having two goalies that can play, that you can trust, that legitimately can get the job done.
Darren Haynes, the Flames from 80 Feet, is our guest here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. I'm Will Nault filling in for Ryan Pinder this morning. And Darren, we'll get back to the series in a second, but you just mentioned something that I want to touch on, because Ben Bishop looks like he might not be able to go tonight, and who knows about his long-term status the rest of this series. How do you see it playing out? What's the drop-off, in your opinion, to Vasilevsky without Bishop now?
Well, Vasilevsky's been kind of the guy that everybody gets excited about when it comes to prospects and goaltenders. A first-round draft pick a few years ago, 4 years ago, I guess it was. He's kind of got all the sample size that you'd like to see, or the results in his, since he's come over from Russia and had some couple good seasons with Syracuse in the AHL. Looks like a very capable goaltender. He's only 21. That would be my concern there. I mean, Ben Bishop was playing at an unbelievably high level. You look at his save percentage in the playoffs, .939.
Yeah.
Like, this is not, we're not talking regular season here where you're playing, you know, a variety of teams where you're going to maybe inflate that number a little bit. These are all very tough teams you're going up against in the playoffs, and he's at a .939. So there is going to be a drop off. Don't kid yourself. Vasilevskiy had a great relief appearance in game one. Can he maintain that for however long they need? That's going to be interesting to see how he does. I think he's going to be under siege tonight. I mean, Pittsburgh knows they need to have this game. Let's not kid themselves. They do not want to go back to Tampa Bay down 0-2. So Pittsburgh is going to be, it's just going to be a barrage of I would expect Pittsburgh just go after it. And we'll see if the young man can hold it together. And even if he loses tonight, I don't think that anything that's not, I mean, these are the playoffs. Goals are going to lose goaltenders. Mm-hmm. So, you know, does he get in there for two or three games? Can he kind of give this team good enough goaltending to go on? Because Tampa Bay, as we're seeing, very good hockey team. Anton Strahlman, a big piece, is getting closer to returning. He really just needs to kind of bridge him through these next few games. And maybe Bishop is able to return. I mean, we don't know anything, right, this time of year, but it sounds like it's not nearly as severe as thought. And let's say Bishop comes back for game five. Let's just kind of say a week. So can Vasilevskiy, for the next three games, one in Pittsburgh and two in Tampa Bay, win at least one, maybe two of those three. Like, that's really the task before him.
Hey, Vasilevskiy, by the way, for what it's worth, Darren just mentioned it. He was really good in relief, 25 of 26 in terms of saves in that relief appearance. Ben Bishop only played 12 and a half minutes before leaving with that injury. On the flip side, you mentioned it, you are going to lose games, but we were kind of debating it this morning. If Pittsburgh loses tonight, do you make that switch to Marc-Andre Fleury?
The Pittsburgh goaltending question that we've been talking about for throughout the postseason, it seems like, especially since Fleury came back and started sitting on the bench versus sitting in the press box. It's a great question. I'm not surprised at how it's played out. I mean, the way Murray has played, you got to give him the opportunity to bounce back when he loses or when the team loses. But if they fall down 0-2, and Pittsburgh, at that point, they're going to be kind of desperately looking for some sort of rallying point. And I would see that as a very impactful move that they could make that would produce that kind of effect. So, you never know. Like, maybe they lose 1-0 tonight and Murray makes 59 saves. But if it's a 4-1 loss or a 4-2 loss or whatever, I think there's definitely a good opportunity if Pittsburgh loses tonight that they make the switch to Fleury to really try and get some momentum going back in their favor.
Darren Haynes is our guest here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Matt Murray's allowed 3 goals in his last 3 appearances in the postseason. And game 2 goes tonight in Pittsburgh. 6 o'clock puck drop. We'll have it for you right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. One guy they want to get going is Sidney Crosby. They changed up his line mates today at practice. Of course, the coaching staff says don't read into that. But Crosby's a guy that needs to get going. Only 2 points in that series against Washington. And if the Pittsburgh Penguins are going to get past Tampa, they're going to need their captain to start finding his scoring touch again.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's him and Malkin, isn't it? Like, Malkin's got no points in his last 5. I mean,
Phil the Thrill is the guy getting all the points.
And that line, great. I mean, that Hagelin, Bonino, and Kessel line, they were obviously dynamite in the series against Washington. But as much as the playoffs are kind of a 3-4 line game, much more so than you can't just kind of get by on your top lines, you can't also survive only on those third and fourth lines. So definitely Pittsburgh needs to turn that around. I noticed that last game, maybe Malkin's on the cusp, 17 shot attempts in game one. So he's close to breaking through. Like I said, I would expect Pittsburgh to bring it pretty heavy tonight. And this could be a laugher if they can get to Vasilevskiy early. But they've got to do it. They've been scuffling a little bit. There's a bunch of guys in scoring slumps. And really, if Vasilevskiy gets a few saves early, gets that confidence, by getting those 2 periods in the other night, he's feeling a lot better versus going in cold. It's not going to be easy for Pittsburgh.
And I guess the hardest question to answer, but one that everybody's talking about right now, is the last one in the East Final we'll spend on. But the captain of the Lightning is Steven Stamkos, and he now just changes to a medication that's been previously used in the National Hockey League for players. Kimmo Timonen used it. Pascal Dupuis used it. This is just a blood-thinning medication that you inject instead of take pills, and these players have played on it in the past, and it worked really well for Timonen, maybe not so much for Pascal Dupuis. It's impossible to predict if he comes back, but I guess the biggest question here, Darren, is how does he impact the series if he does return?
Well, what's great about Tampa Bay is he doesn't have to come in and save the team. Doesn't have to come in and be the savior, because they're going pretty good. Like, you look at the Tyler Johnson, look at Jonathan Drouin. It has been so impressive in the postseason. Palat, Killorn, Filppula, Kucherov. Like, they are deep. Stamkos comes in, really, and they can baby him along. He comes in as kind of a supporting piece, and that would be ideal. And what a way to just bring in a guy who can probably get a key goal for you at any moment, bring him in on maybe even like a third-line kind of role. So that certainly, for teams looking at, I mean, usually in the playoffs, teams are going the other way. Their injuries are starting to pile up. Tampa Bay, here they are. They won 9 of 11 playoff games, and they're cruising along, and they're looking at potentially adding two very high-impact players into their lineup. So, yeah, they're going to be without Ben Bishop, but if they can add Stroman soon, if Stamkos finds a way to come back later in this series, they are just getting going here. So, don't really, Tampa Bay could be very well on their way to another cup win. You never know.
I lied one more, because it is so intriguing. Stamkos and Drouin, and, you know, you mentioned it. Drouin's been so good in these playoffs, and Stamkos, everybody knows his contract status coming up in July. If you're Steve Yzerman, I think Rob put it great last week. He said, you know, if you're Yzerman, you're looking at the situation right now and saying, if I do lose Stamkos to UFA status, yeah, it sucks that I didn't get anything for him in a trade, but it doesn't necessarily mean the death of the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Absolutely not. And I think Jonathan Drouin, the way he has arrived and really with an exclamation point, has made that pretty much how I think that shakes down. And what that also does is it frees up some loot for them to keep a Ben Bishop, if that's the route they decide to go. If they decide that, you know what, Bishop is just too good, and maybe they end up having to trade Vasilevskiy or however that works out down the road. But I'm with you there. And again, yeah, you end up losing Stamkos for nothing if that's the way it plays out. But that's okay. It's not for nothing. It's for a legitimate chance and maybe for winning the Stanley Cup this year. And those are the trade-offs that GM will always make, is we'll keep guys and lose them for nothing if they have a legitimate shot at winning that Stanley Cup and can, you know, play eight weeks of playoff hockey. I mean, that's the kind of trade-off that is better than nothing, right? Way better than nothing.
How do you see it playing out? Like, are you still in the camp that Stamkos leaves?
I think so. I think that's, I just don't, they have such a young core. They have, like, the kind of impact and the kind of money he's probably seeking, I just don't see him as kind of in a role in Tampa Bay that would make that make sense for Tampa Bay. I just don't see it.
And they have so many contracts elsewhere they need to shore up. I'm with you. I don't know if they can fit it all in the salary cap. And if you're Tampa, I think you like your core the way it is. And yeah, it sucks to lose a player like Stamkos, but I think they'll be all right without him. Darren Haynes is our guest here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. I'm Will Nault, filling in for Ryan Pinder this morning. He is back tomorrow. We'll shift gears to the Western Conference Final. Game one goes yesterday. We talked about it off the top with Brian Elliott and how good he was. What did you make a game one overall?
I enjoyed it. Yeah, good game. Like San Jose is, you know, they're really starting to get going here. And both, what I like about this series, I love the matchup, because both of these two teams have got the skeletons in the closet, and both of them are so, this is such a great opportunity for either one to make it to the cup that they had plenty of opportunity in years past. They've had the team. St. Louis always had the depth. The Sharks have been there so many times. Reached that conference final, couldn't get beyond. I just love the matchup. And but again, you know, it's going to be. To me, this is guaranteed six games, and wouldn't surprise me if it goes seven, because I think the teams are that close, right from the goaltending down to their cores and the way everybody's going. The Sharks have the big Pavelski, Couture, Thornton, and Marlowe is their big four, and meanwhile, St. Louis is so deep, right? And I love the way Backus is playing right now. Just it's an enjoyable series. Two good teams that play similar styles, very different style that St. Louis is going up against than they were against Dallas. And I think it's just enjoyable to watch. It's good hockey.
And it's funny, you mentioned Backus. He's got his own contract worries come this summer. He's a pending UFA. And, you know, he was offered a contract extension mid-season. Elliot Friedman told us that this morning. And obviously, Backus did not accept it. Otherwise, that would have been signed. But he was offered an extension, declined it. Now the way he's playing in this playoffs, it probably drives that price up a little bit more. The St. Louis Blues have some questions to answer this offseason too, even behind the bench if they don't win the cup.
Yeah, I don't know. If I don't think it's a cup or not for Hitchcock, but I think he's got him over the hump here. You know, if you lose in seven games to San Jose, I don't know if that's a death blow for Ken Hitchcock, but you're right. You talk about Backus, Troy Brouwer is another. There's two right-hand, right-shooting forwards that are going to be UFAs this summer who are going to get paid well because everybody, all the GMs around the league are watching these guys go for 4, 6, 8 weeks longer than everybody else, right? It's that what's fresh, right? So they're going to be driving their price up with their playoff performance. I don't think they're necessarily the age fit and probably not the price fit either, the way they're going for anyone to slot into this team, because you know, we're always talking about right wingers for the Flames, but it's two guys that are certainly inflating their value. And you're right, for St. Louis, and that's one difference to me, San Jose versus St. Louis. You know, St. Louis is looking at Backus, Brouwer, Steve Ott, Scotty Upshaw, Brodziak. Like, those guys are all pending UFAs, where on the San Jose side of the fence, Nick Spaulding, Roman Polak, James Reimer. Like, these aren't exactly the straws that are stirring the drink for the Sharks. So this is, for St. Louis, I would say the pressure's more on them in terms of this window to win with this team.
Yeah, I would agree for sure. Shifting gears to San Jose, your latest piece from Flames at flamesfrom80feet.ca is posted a couple of days ago, and you're talking about a kind of a pretty cool comparison between the Calgary Flames and their current situation and the San Jose Sharks. Why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
Sure. Well, where the impetus for this came from is really, you know, what did San Jose do last summer? Well, they brought in number one goaltender, and they brought in a new coach. I'm like, well, that's exactly what Calgary needs to do. What is the history of that? Like, how has that kind of, because those are two high profile elements of a hockey team. And I got to thinking, well, what has been the impact of teams that have had to do that kind of double dip in a summer? So I started digging up, and I started going back through the years, and it hasn't happened a lot. Coaches are brought in midway through a year, or there's a lot of coach firings, but the goaltender remains the same. So that combination, I went back over the past 10 years, it's only happened 8 times. So that was the first thing. And San Jose obviously is an example of one where they added Peter DeBoer, they brought in Martin Jones, and here they are. Now, the comparison, just to be clear, because if people don't make it to the bottom where I kind of qualify this, I'm not saying Calgary is in the exact same situation as San Jose, because Calgary made the playoffs for the first time in 6 years last year, where San Jose missed for the first time in like 100 years or so, it felt, right? So there are two teams in different places, but it goes and it speaks to the impact of bringing in, if you can get it right, a new coach and a new goalie can really, you know, kind of give your hockey team a surge. And in the eight times that it's happened over the past 10 years, in all 8 instances, and it shouldn't be a surprise if you're bringing in a number one goalie, but the teams got better, and in most cases got significantly better, and often we went right back to the playoffs. So that's what I kind of get into. I look at kind of the case study of that, and just look at, you know, what are the scenarios, and I thought it was kind of interesting.
Just curious, what the other 7 combinations, how many of them were successful, how many of them failed, and who were the teams?
Okay, so just quickly to look through the teams that made it. So we talked about San Jose. Vancouver last year, bringing in Willie Desjardins and signing Ryan Miller. So that was a team that missed the playoffs by 8 points the previous year and then made it back that next year. A name that's been floating around with Calgary's coaching situation, interestingly, in his last gig, Kevin Dineen took over for Peter DeBoer, ironically, and the Panthers signed Josie Theodore, and they, after missing the playoffs by 21 points, points, made the playoffs that first season under Kevin Dineen. So they had a massive surge. Same thing happened with Colorado, the 2009-10 Colorado Avalanche with Joe Sacco hired to replace Tony Granato, and they brought in Craig Anderson, who had an amazing year in net. So those are the other, and the other one, I guess, was Vancouver, Alain Vigneault, and this is the 07 Vancouver Canucks playoff run where they brought in Luongo at the same time. So those are the five that went from not making the playoffs, brought in a coach, brought in a goalie, made the playoffs the next year with a significant climb in points in most cases. The other three that didn't, two were just this past season, Buffalo and Edmonton. Dan Bylsma is in at Buffalo. Right. Todd McClellan in Edmonton. What does Buffalo do? They trade a first-round pick to get Robin Lehner, even though he didn't play a whole lot, and Cam Talbot went over to the Oilers, of course. Now, of course, both of those didn't make the playoffs, but you look at how they improved, relatively speaking, to the year before. Buffalo had missed the playoffs by 44 points last season, this time just by 15, and Edmonton goes from missing the playoffs by 35 points to missing by 17. So again, they weren't successful in getting back to the playoffs, but they were so far out the year they made those changes. I don't think that was realistic, but they again made big boosts. And the other one that I didn't mention was the Leafs in 07, Paul Maurice, and they traded for Andrew Raycroft, who had one great year before that became a bit of a punchline for a joke. Oof. But they did make it, and they did not make the playoffs, though, after those switches. But those were the times. There were others. If you go way back, you know, Scotty Bowman retired after a Stanley Cup, and Dave Lewis took over. So were those kind of circumstances where a coach got fired and the goaltender got changed. Generally speaking, it's a very positive kind of boost, if you will, to that team going into that next season. So it will be interesting to see how Calgary does next year.
Last one for you, Darren, and kind of something we kicked around the last couple of weeks. You're Brad Tree Living right now. What's higher on your priority list, getting a new coach or getting a goaltender?
It's the coach. I mean, I think you want to have the coach that could, you're looking at coaches right now. Coach, you could be deciding on a coach before you even know what those goaltender conversations are going to be like. You kind of have to wait for the season to play out. So I think they've already been looking at goaltenders. I mean, I don't think this was a surprise and a declaration at the end of the year that, you know what, yeah, maybe we do need a goalie. I bet you they've been looking at that stuff already. So they probably have some ideas in mind, but I think coach has got to be priority one. I know he's over in Russia right now. I believe he gets back at the end of this week. And I would expect that that will really kick into high gear when he's back on the same continent as probably the coaching candidate. So that, to me, is number one.
Yeah, and I would anticipate it probably going to take a little bit longer. I don't see the Flames naming a new head coach next week. As you mentioned, Tree Living is just getting back. This is going to be a name, I feel anyways, Darren, I don't know if you agree, but I think this is going to be a name that maybe a lot of people haven't heard of. I don't think they're going the recycled route is my thing.
Well, it's an interest. You know what? There was a piece came out of the World Championships written by Michael Tracos of Post Media, and he talked to Tree Living, and this was a bit of an update we got last week. And what I thought, there was an interesting quote that Tree Living said, and he said that he's not so much looking for quantity in terms of years of experience. What he's looking for, quality of experience. As someone that's coached, and doesn't have to be forever, but has had good success and has had a real impact and has had been a big part of that impact. So you kind of read between the lines on that, and kind of what you're saying is it might be a name kind of off the radar. I've kind of been looking at guys that have been around a little bit. Mm-hmm. They've had one NHL gig, looking for a second, but there are some other rookies that haven't had an NHL head coaching gig that, as I'm kind of reading that, thinking that through, it may be a name kind of from right field, if you will, or left field. What is it when we never heard of it?
left field.
Let's go with left. All right. So anyway, you might be onto something there.
Yeah. All I know is it's a long list, and sure, there's a lot of people interested in that job. So we'll wait and see what happens. But I wouldn't anticipate anything in the next 10 days or so, as we talked about. It'll take a little bit of time, but they'll get there, and it'll be an interesting summer for the Calgary Flames. Darren, appreciate your time this morning, and have a good week, and we'll catch up soon.
All right. Sounds good, Will.
Darren Haynes of flamesfrom80feet.ca. If you want to go check out his San Jose Sharks comparison piece, it's actually a pretty intriguing read. Go check it out at flamesfrom80feet.ca, or you can check him out on Twitter at Darren W. Haynes. He'll post it on there as well, and you can go check it out. He's got great stuff on the Flames. He digs a little bit deeper than some other guys and spends more time on projects, so that's sometimes a longer you know, more extensive read, you can get it from Darren, and he always gives us great stuff Monday mornings at 9:05. All right, we'll take a quick break. Around the corner, we'll catch up with Shai Davidi because the Blue Jays find themselves in some headlines this morning, and more importantly, one prominent Blue Jay finds his name in some headlines. Jose Bautista, John Gibbons, Rougned Odor. What's the fallout going to be from the brawl in Arlington yesterday afternoon? We'll catch up with Sportsnet's Shai Davidi around the corner. It's Pinder in the Morning without Pinder on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Ryan Pinder in the Morning only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Left side, short hop by Beltre at third, go to second, one, go, and then hold it, the ball is thrown past the first base, and we've got a fight at second base. Bautista fighting there, Beltre takes him away from Odor, and now more fisticuffs. Josh Donaldson flies into the pack. It's all red and blue on the grass behind the second base bag as fists are flying here at Globe Life Park. Bautista and Odor start throwing punches together after Bautista's hard slide into the bag at second base.
Fireworks in Arlington, Texas on a Sunday afternoon. And not your usual fireworks after a ball game. This was fists flying, sunglasses flying, and a hard slide. Jose Bautista finally got beaned after going back all the way to the Game 5 of the ALDS, where he tossed his bat after the series clinching, three-run home run, if you will. It wasn't a walk-off, but it did clinch them the series. And, well, Jose, yeah, kind of surprised.
Pretty surprised. You know, obviously, that's the only reason why he got me, and he got me pretty good, so I have to give him that. But it takes a little bit of a bigger man, I guess, to knock me down.
Manager John Gibbons, not really a fan either.
You know, it's ugly and unfortunate. You know, to me, it was gutless. You know, we played seven games, and I don't know, 10 games, whatever, you know. Other 29 teams out there, if they got an issue, they come at you right away, you know. And but to wait till the end, you know, it just kind of tells me a little bit something, you know.
Blue Jays end up losing the game. They lose 2 of 3 over the weekend to Texas. They're now back below 500, and they're back in action tonight against Tampa at home, trying to get back to 500, and it's been kind of a struggle. They've been floating around that 500 mark all year long. Welcome back to Pinder in the Morning. I am Will Nault filling in for Ryan Pinder. He is not here today. He's back tomorrow, and he'll be back on this program at this time in 24 hours. Pleased that this man could make some time for us. Very busy day for him. He's traveling back from Texas, but he did stop by to chat with us, and we do appreciate it, Shai. And Shai Davidi from Sportsnet is our guest. We're talking about the Blue Jays and the Rangers. And Shai, you go back to that game yesterday. You're sitting there watching it all unfold. What's going through your mind as you watch Jose Bautista go hard at second base?
Well, really, it sort of came out of nowhere. You know, I think most people figured if the Rangers were going to throw at Jose Bautista and make a point of getting some vengeance, they would have done it either during the series in the Toronto earlier, during the series here in Texas. But when nothing happened, I think a lot of the Blue Jays and most people just kind of figured it was over. You know, the Rangers publicly had made a point to say, you know, they weren't going to seek out any vengeance. It was behind them. It's in the past. But there was Matt Bush in the eighth inning, first pitch square in the ribs of Jose Bautista, which made it pretty clear that it was intentional.
What do you see happening after this now? Because a lot of people believe this could be a rallying point for the Blue Jays, who are still floating around 500. What was the mood like in the clubhouse after the game? Is this something you believe this team will rally around to?
Look, you know, these types of things can be galvanizing moments for clubs. And certainly, you know, the Blue Jays were a lot of adrenaline in the clubhouse after. I think a lot of them were very happy with the way they stood up for one another. But that doesn't necessarily translate into being able to get outs late in games with your bullpen or being able to get a hit with runners in scoring position. And those are two things that two areas the Blue Jays have really had a tough time with so far this season. So, you know, the camaraderie, the good feeling in the clubhouse, all that stuff, that's important. But it doesn't necessarily translate into better performance on the field. And really, that's what the Blue Jays need. They need to be a little bit more crisp. And in a lot of ways, what got lost in the fireworks yesterday is that
they let a winnable game slip away because another rough day for the bullpen.
What are you, are we hearing anything in terms of from the league and suspensions possible coming? Have we heard anything on that yet?
Well, there are going to be suspensions. There are going to be fines. There's going to be a fair amount of discipline. But my understanding is today will probably be more of a review and interview type of day, fact gathering. There's a lot for them to sort through. There was certainly a bunch of different things going on. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw this some suspension stuff handed down Tuesday, maybe even into Wednesday. But I don't think that we'll see them today. Just because of a time frame standpoint, it's going to be hard for a Major League Baseball to sort through that in an expedited fashion.
Shai Davidi of Sportsnet is our guest, and Shai, I guess we'll talk about the road trip as a whole because they are still at, you know, below 500, still can't get away from that mark right now. What do you see as kind of this team's biggest issue outside of maybe the bullpen?
Well, in some ways it's been they're hitting with runners in scoring position, but, you know, largely their offense in general. I mean, this is a team that's built to out-hit its flaws, and to this point, they haven't done that. You know, I mean, Troy Tulowitzki had a good road trip. He's starting to, looks like he's really moving in the right direction now, which is a good sign for them. Jose Bautista had a good series in Texas, so which sort of got lost as well. But as a whole, this group isn't clicking yet. You know, before Jose Bautista hit the three-run double on Sunday, you know, the Jays just squandered chance after chance after chance, and really they should have been in double digits in that game, and last year they would have been in double digits. So that's the thing that continues to be glaring for the Blue Jays. The other thing is that, you know, they have had a fair number of games where the bullpen has let it get away, and they have to figure those two things out, because otherwise they're going to continually waste the strong starting pitching that they've gotten to this point.
I guess just talk about maybe the injury to Brett Cecil and where his situation is right now. It's a tricep issue, correct?
That's right. The Blue Jays don't think it's serious. He doesn't think it's serious. But it was the tightness was to the point that he couldn't really throw. He said he was maybe pitching about 80% and was trying to use his lower body rather than his arm to generate the velocity. And that's not a good situation. So he's going to get an MRI today in Florida. The Blue Jays will get a bit more information there. The expectation is that they'll show nothing but inflammation. And in the interim, if he hasn't been struggling, then he's not available. I mean, this is a major piece for the Blue Jays in their bullpen, and one that they're really not positioned to replace.
And, you know, story you have up at Sportsnet.ca right now with the Cecil injury, kind of a cool story and a surprising story for a guy that just about walked away from baseball this winter. Maybe just tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. Dustin Antolin was the guy who was recalled from AAA Buffalo to replace Brett Cecil on the roster. And he sort of emerged out of the blue a little bit. He's had a good start to the season, big arm, so some power velocity, power slider. He's got a split. And the Blue Jays are, he was kind of pitching the best right now at AAA Buffalo. So that's why he ended up the man of the moment. But during the offseason, he was a minor league free agent. He was an 11th round pick of the Blue Jays in 2008 and really hadn't made a lot of progress. He wasn't getting a ton of offers. And finally, the Blue Jays gave him a chance about 2 weeks to go before spring training. He was pondering retirement at that point, but his girlfriend told him to go give it one more shot. He did. And a couple months later, he's in the big leagues.
Shai Davidi of Sportsnet is our guest here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. My name is Will Nalton. Shai, will continue with kind of the bullpen pitching. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe I saw somewhere you were talking on Sportsnet 590 a week ago or so, and you said that perhaps your biggest concern right now isn't with Cecil's struggles, it's potentially with Drew Storen.
Well, I mean, he's had a really rough go as well. And, you know, his last outing was in San Francisco, the 10th inning, and he pulled off, I believe it was the 10th inning of an extra inning game there, and he pulled off a miracle escape there after there was an error that caused some troubles. But he's not sharp, and he's been a dominant reliever. He hasn't been a dominant reliever with the Blue Jays yet. The velocity's down a little bit. His command isn't crisp enough to compensate for that right now. And he was another guy who was expected to really fill the void for Aaron Sanchez moving into the rotation. The Blue Jays figured that between Storen and Cecil, they could compensate for Sanchez's loss in bridging the gap to closer Roberto Osuna. It hasn't played out that way. So, you know, the Blue Jays don't have a lot of other internal options. No one's really stepped up. Gavin Floyd has done a nice job of late, but he got burned for the walk-off homer in Saturday's game against Drew Stubbs. So the this continues to be an issue for the Blue Jays, one that they don't really have the tools to resolve.
On kind of maybe the flip side, the guy that has been, you know, kind of a bright star for the Blue Jays this season is Jay Happ. Well, can you maybe talk about just that stint in Pittsburgh, what that maybe did for him, and if there's anything that maybe you've noticed that's different from his second stint with the Blue Jays than his first?
Well, a lot of things are different. You know, you can go start at, you know, personal comfort. You know, he understands he's here to be a starting pitcher, and there's no drama around it. Where the first time, you know, he arrived and the Blue Jays via trade from Houston, and the Blue Jays didn't want to put him in the starting rotation right away because they wanted to let Aaron Laffey continue to pitch, which, you know, probably wasn't the right idea at the time. And so he's certainly in a better spot mentally, but he's also refined his game, made some adjustments with his delivery and with his approach with the Pittsburgh Pirates second half of last season under pitching coach Ray Sarich there. And that seems to have made it a big difference. But he's a different guy, too, because he's got a two-seamer now that's more effective. It's more consistent with his curveball and his changeup. And he's got better command with his fastball, and that's just made a better package. And this is all part of the ceiling that Jay Happ has had all along, but he's finally seems to have found a way to leverage all his talents and get results from it.
It's funny because heading into the year, a lot of people were questioning about the starting pitching and wonder, you know, that might be the weakness of this group. But funny enough, Shai, here we are in the middle of May, and that's kind of been the lone bright spot, if you will.
No, absolutely. If this team is several games under 500, if the starting rotation doesn't do what it's done so far, I mean, they've really been the backbone of this team. And it's kind of funny, you know, you always go into a season thinking, oh, X, Y, and Z is going to happen. And things just play out differently because, you know, you would have taken the big offense as a given. And that hasn't been the case. And so, you know, full credit to the starters because without them, this team would be in a whole boatload of trouble.
It's funny, you know, Shai Davidi of Sportsnet's our guest. I guess lost in all the talk off the top about the brawl, I completely forgot or you know, forgot to mention that Sunday was a pretty big milestone for Jose Bautista, 1,000 games with the Blue Jays, and for a trade that was, you know, kind of raised some eyebrows when it happened when J.P. Ricciardi brought him in, he's turned out to be, you know, one of the best Blue Jays of all time.
Yeah, it's, you know, arguably the most one-sided trade in Blue Jays history. It's really worked out well for them, obviously. But it was a nice milestone moment for Jose Bautista, and just kind of signaled the amount of success. You know, he's been with the team spanning now three front office regimes. He was picked up at the end of the J.P. Ricciardi years, was there through the entire Alex Anthopoulos reign. And now he's here as Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins are starting out. How long beyond this season, we'll find out. But, you know, he's over that time, he's become a player, he's become an icon in franchise history and someone destined for a spot on the club's level of excellence.
Last one for you, Shai. I know it seems like maybe I ask you this every single time, but finally feels like we've got a little bit of progress when it comes to the health of Devin Travis.
Yeah, this and legitimately now he's out on rehab assignment. Once a rehab assignment starts, the team has 20 days to either shut him down and reset things or activate him. So, barring any setbacks, the Blue Jays are building him up for a return within the next couple of weeks. And it'll be really right now a matter of how quickly he's able to progress. They're going to try to truncate a spring training into 2 weeks. And as long as Devin Travis doesn't have any physical issues, I'd expect that we'd see him relatively soon.
And maybe a tough one to answer at this point, but what do you anticipate the roster or the effects on the roster that his return might have?
Yeah, it is an interesting question. And, you know, if as things stand now, you know, I would not be shocked if Ryan Goins is the guy who ends up going down to make room for Travis. You know, Goins has had a tough start offensively. There's been very minimal offensive production. And as spectacular a defender as he is, right now the Blue Jays need that offensive thump. So this is just a guess, but I think right now that might be the way they go.
Shai, I know it's a very busy day for you. I appreciate you taking some time to chat with me, and we'll catch up soon, man.
No problem. Be well.
Shai Davidi of Sportsnet taking some time out of his busy travel day to chat with us, and we do appreciate it as the Jays lose 2 of 3 in the week on the weekend in Arlington to the Texas Rangers. They're back home tonight to face the Rays. They're 19-20 on the year. 5:07 first pitch. It'll be J-Hap on the mound, looking to go to 6-0 on the season. And J-Hap was one of those signings when it happened, people were like, I don't really know what to make of it. His last stint in Toronto, not all that well. And the sample size in Pittsburgh, where he was great to end the year in 2015, was good. But again, it's a small sample size, so what can we do? But he's come in for the Blue Jays and been terrific and looking to go to 6-0 on the year. He'll face Drew Smyly and the Rays tonight. It's the 5:07 first pitch, as I mentioned. You can watch it on Sportsnet. We got to take a quick break. Got to come back, take care of some business. A little bit of golf tips around the corner. It's Pinder in the Morning without Pinder on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Get connected. Text 960-960 to get your voice heard. Ryan Pinder in the Morning on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Will Nall filling in for Ryan Pinder. Quickly running out of time, but can't leave you on a Monday without your golf tips. Here it is.
ATB Golf Tips with Ryan Pinder, brought to you by ATB Financial. Come and see some of Canada's best tee it up at the ATB Financial Classic, August 11th to 14th at Country Hills.
Scott Schuldeis joins us from Sundry, the head pro out there. Today we're going to focus on putting. It was a nightmare for me my first round, and I'm just wondering what tips you would give a golfer early in the year, maybe an intermediate golfer, on reading greens, how we can, you know, you're going to use your putter more than any other club in your bag. How can we shave some strokes off?
Yeah, so like you said, reading greens is probably one of the most important parts of putting. To read the green properly, what you want to do is make sure that you're looking at the putt from all different angles. So do a walk around the hole, do a 360-degree walk, look at all the different angles of the putt, and that's how you're going to determine all the little breaks the best. So sometimes when you look at a putt just from one angle, you know, you can't quite see all the different breaks. So that's my biggest advice, is just looking at the putt from every different angle.
I've played a few courses where the actual grass that the green has can be a big determining factor. If it's bent one way or everything's sloped one way, how common is that? Or is that only on certain courses, is that rare to see that?
It's more common on Bermuda greens, you know, down in the States. But, you know, you can have that in up here as well on bent greens. So if the grass looks nice and shiny, that usually means that it's down grain and it's going to be a little bit quicker. Whereas if the grass is into you, it's usually a darker green color. So that means that the grain's running into you, and that means it's going to be a little bit slower.
Finally, any exercises or tips? If someone's got a half hour and has a green that they're going to work on their putting, what sort of exercises would you give them?
Focus on the speed. Speed of putting is really important. So make sure you're taking a couple of practice strokes before you hit the putt, and you're just trying to get the feel of how hard to hit it, and that's going to help you get the correct speed.
Good tips. I like that, Scott. Now tell us about your event coming up May 29th.
Yeah, so on Sunday, May 29th, we're having a $100,000 hole-in-one event. It's a 10 o'clock shotgun, and it's open to anyone that wants to play. So you just have to call, book a group, pay a regular price green fee, and anyone that gets hole-in-one on hole number 14 is going to win $100,000. Now, we also have vehicles on the other par threes, and you can also win those with a hole-in-one. They're being supplied by Mountain View Dodge in Olds.
And if people are looking for more info on the course itself, where would you send them?
Yeah, go to our website. It's www.sundrygolf.com. We have all our rates on there, as well as all the info about our hole-in-one event.
Sundrygolf.com. Thanks, Scott.
That'll
ATB do Golf Tips with Ryan Pinder, brought to you by ATB Financial. Come and see some of Canada's best tee it up at the ATB Financial Classic, August 11th to 14th at Country Hills.
The pause really threw me off there. It's all good, though. That'll do it for the show. Thank you to Shai Davidi and Darren Haynes. Jim Rome is next.
Get the f*** out of here.